Hi, I'm Susie Burrell.
And I'm Leanne Ward.
And welcome to The Nutrition Couch, a weekly podcast from two of Australia's leading dietitians, bringing you everything that is new in the worlds of nutrition, diets, and good food. From The Nutrition Couch today, fat loss. We hear about it all the time, but why is it so difficult? We discuss the most common barriers to sustainable fat loss and how to take control. Our clinic question of the week is about coffee. How much is too much? What is the healthiest order? And can you still enjoy your favourite caffeine hit if you are trying to lose weight? In today's product segment, we take a deep dive into the growing range of low-carb pastas you can find in supermarkets that actually taste pretty good. And our listener question is about good fat. How much is too much? And how do you get the balance in your own diet right? But to kick us off today, Leanne, what is the latest on your house renos?
Ah, yes, so exciting. So we are working with our architect at the moment who I think about 2 weeks ago presented us with a few different options. One was sort of like a moderate renovation. One was a large scale renovation. And the other one was a new build option. And just the way I think the building market is, maybe in Brisbane, maybe really across Australia, and the fact that our renovation options were going to need a lot of excavation. So we've got a super sloped block, which we would need to cut into some of that, which is just going to be huge money. The renovation option was almost coming up as expensive, or only, you know, 20, 30 grand less than, which it sounds like a lot of money, but when you're thinking about a whole house build, it's actually a very small amount, was coming up very similar price to the brand new build option. So we're actually leaning towards the new build option now. So we're talking with our architect more about refining those plans. So thinking we might go more towards the new build instead of the full scale renovation. So that's exciting.
So is this like a 5-year plan? It's sounding
So can we start building by the end of the year? And the architect's just like, deep breath swallow. He's like, probably next year at the earliest.
Lucky you're lucky mother-in-law.
Exactly. Yeah, no, we're very lucky to live with family and get on very well with her. So very fortunate there. And in my makeshift office here at the moment, I've just nabbed one of her spare bedrooms and turned that into my office. So no, we're doing well. But yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, if we can start building maybe later this year, early next year, that'll be good, I think. But yeah, it's exciting, getting to build things and design things and, you know, saying I want lots of light into my office and I want lots of fresh air through the house. Like it's nice to have that. Whereas in the house that we have at the moment, it's just the build's a bit disjointed and the rooms are very, very small and things are quite dark. Like the kitchen's at the back of the house, so it's quite dark where the sun comes in through the front of the house. So just the design that he's managed to build is more that, you know, the C-shaped design. So there's like a central courtyard in the middle of the house, which is beautiful. It lets a lot of light and air through to the back of the house as well. So very exciting time for us. But we honestly thought we'd sort of be nearly moved in by now. So things have taken a little bit longer than expected, but it's a really exciting journey.
Well, it's good to have long-term goals. You know, we're often talking to clients about short, long-term, and this is definitely one of the longer-term, higher-order goals that we have for yourself. And every so often we'll check in and see that progress of that reno and tap away. So if your journey is in line with long-term goals, listen to Leanne's house renovation project and you can identify.
And if you guys are interested, I'm more than happy to pop up some ideas and plans and that sort of thing as we go along on the Nutrition Couch podcast on Instagram or Facebook. If you guys are interested, just send us a couple of comments and messages and let us know. And it can be a mix of nutrition, wellness, and some house plans.
And interior design. I think it's great. I love it.
Absolutely.
Yes. All right. Well, moving on to our topic, our real topic of interest, as opposed to Leanne's house reno, we thought that it was time on the Nutrition Couch for a chat about weight loss. And we like to talk about specifically fat loss because there is a big difference between weight and fat loss. And because both you and I spend, I guess, 90-100% of our time working with clients on who have this goal, I thought it was a good opportunity to have a bit of a chat about weight loss and fat loss and put some perspective onto it. What is the process involved? And then I guess more specifically, where do clients tend to go wrong when it comes to getting those long-term results? So just to kick us off, I'll give a little bit of background on the physiology of fat metabolism, which is another word for fat burning. And it's interesting to most people that when we're sitting at rest, we're always burning a different percentage of energy. We're not just burning carbohydrate or just burning fat. When we're sitting around like today, when we're doing the podcast, we're burning a percentage of fat and a percentage of carbohydrate. And then what happens is as our energy output increases, those proportions of calories that we're burning change over time. And when we're initially exercising, we're actually burning a higher proportion of carbohydrate from our muscles. Our muscles and our liver store carbohydrate to ensure that the brain always has a readily available source of fuel. And then as our calorie amounts increase as the result of movement and when we put in extra activity to burn more calories, overall that proportion of carbohydrate and fat, you have a greater proportion of fat mass burn. So when you start a calorie controlled diet where you're creating a calorie deficit, as we've spoken about before, either via your food or an increasing physical activity, what happens is over a couple of days, you burn through some of those stores of carbohydrates, and the average person's got a day or two worth of carbohydrates stored, and larger people have more carbohydrates stored because they have larger muscle mass and larger body frames. So it takes a few days for them to deplete that carbohydrate, and then the body has to work that bit harder to mobilize some of these fat stores to have that fat available to be burnt. And so that's why initially when someone's starting a calorie-controlled or exercise program, they might lose more weight initially as those glycogen stores of carbohydrate are depleted, and then the fat process of burning fat over time reduces. So initially when we're changing calorie loads, we tend to get some drops on the scales, and then what our goal as dietitians is to get that person burning fuel more effectively, burning more calories through exercise, and then keeping an eye on their calorie requirements to make sure that their body, as it loses weight and becomes more efficient burning energy, at times they might actually need more calories to get that change. So the way I would describe it is with my clients, I will try and reduce calories initially, get them physically active and get that half a kilo a week, sometimes a little bit more for larger people. And then over 4, 6, 8 weeks, as their weight loss slows down, as that full fat metabolism's happening, so they're burning more fat, I want to get them more active and more efficient at burning calories over time. But definitely there are some patterns that come with clients where they do well initially and then inevitably they hit a block and things stop. So I thought it would be timely to talk about some of those key blocks that come up time and time again. And this may be you if you feel like you're trying really hard with your diet, but you're not getting those results. But before we move into that, is there anything else you want to add about that process of fat loss and why it's a process over time?
I think just an important point to really bring home for our listeners, Susie, is when we talk about fat burning, because you see it all the time on social media. So for me, the only way that humans can burn fat is through a calorie deficit. We know that from the science. A ketogenic diet is not fat burning. An intermittent fasting diet is not fat burning. You cannot take fat burning pills or powders, and no one food burns fat any more than any other food. Some foods may be better off on our metabolisms in terms of protein, but they're not fat burning foods. And so a lot of people will say, oh, I should do a ketogenic diet because it's a fat burning diet. No, the reason that you burn fat with a ketogenic diet is because most people aim towards a calorie deficit. So because a ketogenic diet can, in some people, suppress your appetite a little bit more, therefore you're eating slightly less calories, therefore you're in a calorie deficit, and that creates the fat burning. Just the fact that you're eating a ton of fat and minimal carbohydrates does not put you into a fat burning state. I think that's something that's really important to remember. Same with intermittent fasting. You do not become this fat burning machine because you're doing intermittent fasting or because you don't eat before 12 p.m. You have fat burning and fat metabolism because intermittent fasting creates a calorie deficit, because you've got a smaller window of eating, therefore you have less time to eat, you eat less food, and most people achieve a calorie deficit that way. Pills, powders, fat burning, things like that you see in supplement shops, big fat waste of money, don't even go there. So I think that that's an important point, Susie, to bring home about fat burning, is that the only way to achieve fat burning is through a calorie deficit. It doesn't mean we have to calculate our calories. A lot of people say, well, how do I achieve a calorie deficit without counting my calories? You can work with a professional. That is why there are nutritionists and dietitians available. If you've got problems with your teeth, you go to a dentist. If your car's broken, you go see a mechanic. If you need help with your nutrition, you should 100% go and see a nutritionist or a dietitian, particularly if you have that background in disordered eating, or you're just, you know, you're not sure what to do with your calories, you're not sure where to set them, you're not sure how to create a deficit in your meal plan without actively plugging everything into an app. And even if you do that, then you're still not getting results either. So this is a big plug to actually work one-on-one with a nutritionist and a dietitian. And I feel like people are so resistant to spending money on that because everything's free online. But if you're someone who feels like they're doing all the right things, or they've tried everything and nothing works, that's your push, I guess, to go and book in with a qualified nutritionist or dietitian to actually set you on the right path and make this journey a lot easier than what you've been doing so far.
Well, I think the take-home message for me from that is that it's a process, and what you start with in terms of a calorie deficit will change over time according mm-hmm. to where you're at with your fat loss journey. So there's a big difference between someone who wants to lose 5 or 10 kilos of body fat compared to someone who needs or wants to lose 20 to 30. It will not remain constant. It's about that constant change. And if you think of your body like a machine, it's about getting it working the right way, and then as it becomes more efficient, changing the variables around again. And as your body gets used to burning a certain amount of calories, you have to constantly challenge and change it to keep the process. So for the benefits when it comes to having someone monitor your progress, particularly when the goal is a larger weight loss over time, is that it will keep the variables changing so you get continual fat loss on the scales. And one of the best examples I can think of to demonstrate this is when I've seen clients who have been on a low-carb diet and lost a lot of weight. Now, that might have been via a strict shake program, or they might have done a keto diet, but it's been very, very strict for a set period of time. So in their mind, they've lost a lot of weight. And when they were compliant with that program, which was also creating a significant calorie deficit for a long period of time, they have lost that 10, 20, 30 kilos. But the issue is, when they go back to eating normal food again, which has some carbohydrate in it, because the body hasn't been used to having that load of fuel, it's become less efficient at burning. And that best demonstrates people who have been really, really successful once or twice before on very strict diets, and then all of a sudden it no longer works. And it no longer works because we haven't taught that body to become more efficient at burning. And so they've starved themselves, and that's had a significant impact on metabolic rate. And now our job is to rehab and teach that body to burn fat again. So that's why that process aspect is most important. But we could talk about this all day, but I think the key thing for people listening is that we want to give you practical strategies that you can take into your lives. So these are some of the reasons I find that clients are not successful with their weight loss goals long term. And the first one I'm going to throw out there, and you'll have ones that spring to mind straight away as well, Leanne, is that my clients go on and then completely off their program. So they're mm-hmm. really good at keeping things really structured and reasonably strict in the week. So they'll have a great protein-rich breakfast. They'll have a lunch with lots of salad and vegetables. They'll pack their snacks in the afternoon so they're not tempted. And then they'll have portion control amount of meat or chicken or fish with loads of veggies at night. But then because they've felt so strict in the week, they then completely go off track and they literally just eat their way on huge volumes of food through the weekend. So they might go out and have a large brunch at a cafe and large juice, and then they'll have takeaway or Uber Eats for lunch or for dinner. And they've gone from consuming a calorie control plan of 1,500 calories to 2,000 or 3,000 calories on the weekend. And it's this difference between being on and off the program that drives me crazy, because that 2 or 3 days of overeating completely undoes all the work that I've geared up for in the week. And so one of the messages is that, sure, by all means, you can have a high calorie meal or two, but it's definitely not writing off whole days of intake where you're grossly over-consuming calories, because our bodies just don't cope with that difference. So the more consistent you can keep your program over a longer period of time if you need to lose a significant amount of weight, the easier it will be to not undo all that damage in the week.
And for me, I really think it's about thinking about it from a long-term approach, particularly if you're not working with a professional, because the professional can help you reintroduce calories and carbohydrates and things that you may have reduced right down in a slow, controlled manner so that you don't regain all the weight back. But what happens to most people is they lose the 5 kilos, the 10, the 20, whatever. Then they go back to their usual eating habits and the weight comes on really, really quickly again. So don't forget, if to get the weight off, you need to cut out all carbohydrates and got in a keto diet. Also, your body's not going to be used to metabolizing and absorbing and utilizing that fuel. So if you then start eating carbohydrates again, a lot of people then have a lot of gut health issues and intolerances as well, because you've just cut them out for how long a period of time. So your body's not used to having them on a regular basis either. So if you're already somebody with some gut health issues and some intolerances, really try to avoid cutting out entire food groups to get the weight off, because you're just going to do more damage from that gut health perspective and make it harder long-term for you to reintroduce these foods as well. So definitely start higher in terms of your calorie deficit and slowly adjust over time, because as you lose weight, you get in a smaller body. That's something that a lot of people don't understand. You know, if you lose 5 kilos, you're in a body that is 5 kilos less. You don't need the same amount of calories as when you were 5 kilos higher. If you lose 20 kilos, your body is now 20 kilos less. You can't go back to that old lifestyle that you used to have. Of course, the weight's going to come back on again. You have to
start with a plan that is sustainable for you in the long term. And if intermittent fasting is not something you can do long term, probably not a great idea to do to get the weight off. If keto diet is not something you can do long term, probably not a great idea to do that to start with, because once you lose the weight, it's going to come back on again once you go back to your normal eating. So that's why Susie and I are big fans of not dieting, but using that lifestyle approach where we're just tweaking small things here and there and slowly creating that calorie deficit over time. Because if you start in a huge calorie deficit, such as 1200 calories, like a lot of people do, when that weight loss stalls, or when you get the 3, 4, 5 kilos off and then nothing happens, where do you go from there? Do you pull out more calories? What? And then put yourself down to 1000 calories so that you're starving and you want to eat your arm off? No, it's not realistic. It's not sustainable for people. So of course you're going to revert back to your old eating habits because you're starving. Who can blame you? And you're going to pull the weight back on again. So it's much, much better to put yourself into a small calorie deficit, which for some people, a lot of people, could just be 1800 calories. Like if I want to drop a little bit of body fat, Susie, granted I'm 6'1", I'm quite active, my frame is a lot larger, I have some good muscle mass on board. A calorie deficit for me is 2000 calories initially to begin with. And so that's the benefit of working one-on-one with a dietitian, as we can help you create these tweaks to your nutrition plans. We're just pulling out, maybe it's half a snack or a snack a day, or that's it. Or maybe it's just taking out one Uber Eats meal or a couple of glasses of wine each week in order to create a small calorie deficit. But you need to do that constant adjusting over time in order to continue to move that deficit lower over time as your body gets smaller.
So the other thing that comes up time and time again for me is that I find that clients are either on with their movement or they're off. So some days they'll be fantastic and they'll do 12 to 15,000 steps, which is amazing because that is sort of a good amount required for weight loss as opposed to just maintenance. It's that little bit extra in place often of a gym visit or cardio activity. But then I look at their diaries and they'll have days where they do nothing. So they'll do 2,000 steps a day. Now, I am not 6'1", I'm 5 foot nothing. Very sad. So unfortunately, my calorie requirements are far less than yours, and given I am also a little bit older. But there would never be a day I could hand on heart say, and I can post my Fitness Pal phone records, where I would do less than 8 or 10,000 steps a day. Like, it's just what I know needs to happen to keep my body healthy. If I don't, I know I don't go to the bathroom as regularly. I know that it's what I need to prevent weight gain. You know, I try and get up to 20,000 a lot of days. But when I see, I think, what, you haven't literally not left the house or moved all day. Now, obviously, there's times when the weather's really poor and you can't get out. But on the whole, we should be aiming to be active every day. That's just a baseline of what people need to do for health, let alone weight loss. So you cannot expect to lose weight if you're moving less than, I'd say, at least 8,000, if not more, steps per day, which also leads into another habit, and it's the habit of the vegetables. So I find that when clients are really quite motivated, they will map their food out and they'll pack salad or they'll pack soup in the day, and they'll make sure their dinner has got 2 to 3 cups of vegetables, which again is something as dietitians and nutritionists, we automatically focus our meals around. But my clients, I'll look at their diaries and I'll write all the time, where are your vegetables? So they'll have a pasty or they'll have a toasted sandwich for lunch, or they'll have a serve of a fish and a potato and there's no vegetables. So I can't stress enough, if your goal specifically is fat loss, how important it is to get to that 2 to 3 cups of veggies and salad at least at both lunch and dinner. Because what happens is, if you don't have that bulk, you will overeat calories from another way, because the body will register you haven't had a bulk of food, and it means that it's really, really difficult to keep the calorie deficit on track that will lead to that consistent weight loss of, say, 0.5 kilo each week over time, that will lead you to those larger amounts lost.
And if you get into good habits of always having veggies with every meal, there's no reason you can't have pizza with some salad. There's no reason you can't have a burger with a side salad instead of a side of fries. There's no reason that you can't have your spinach and ricotta pasty, if that's what you want for lunch, with a large garden salad with that. You're right. Like, we need to be focusing on what we can add into our diet and those consistent habits over time, Susie, rather than just like 1 or 2 days off plan, or we're on holidays and, you know, so many people gain so much weight on holidays because all of their good habits like walking and veggies just go out the door because they're on holidays. So I hope that gives our listeners some extra little things to think about if, you know, the goal is fat loss, or they're saying, I've done all the right things, but the scales aren't moving in the right direction. Hopefully that gives our listeners at home some really good tips to work on.
And I think, as a final summary point, a little bit of it is mindset. There seems to be people who are sort of fully committed and want to do everything possible to reach their goal. And then there's people who are looking at a minimalistic, what is the least amount of effort and work I can do to see change on the scales? And if you go in with that mindset, you will always just be doing a couple of kilos here and going off track again. You've got to look at it as a holistic program to do over the period of time required. So I'm going to concentrate on this fully for a month, 95% of the time, or 3 months, or even 6 months if your goal is to lose 20 kilos, because that is the kind of focus it needs over time. A minimalistic attitude won't give you those long-term weight results and keep it off long-term, in my experience.
Wonderful. All right, Susie, well, that brings us to our next favorite topic after fat loss, which I think has to be coffee, right?
It's definitely my favorite.
So how much caffeine is too, and we should probably talk about this in terms of caffeine, not just coffee, because a lot of other things such as tea and cola and chocolate even contain caffeine. So how much caffeine is too much caffeine? I know that we're both fans of our morning coffee brew. I sometimes will have a lunch or an afternoon coffee as well. But what are your thoughts on coffee, Susie, and how much caffeine is too much?
Oh, coffee is my reason for living since I've had children. Like, there is nothing that I look forward to more in the morning or the day as my coffee, which is, I don't know if it's sad or convenient because it only costs $4 or $5 and it's giving me maximal pleasure. I think the things that go through my mind with coffee are two things. One, you've alluded to, of course, the caffeine loads, and that's definitely relevant for energy regulation and people who have trouble sleeping and even gut health, but also what else is going into that coffee order, because there's a very, very big difference in coffee orders in this day and age. So as a reference point, I'll talk about the coffee nutritionals first and then we can talk about the caffeine. So a small cappuccino, latte, a milk-based coffee, as a rule of thumb, has got anywhere between 60 calories for a cappuccino, which has got less milk, up to about 100 for a small size. And then if you go for more what we'd call now a larger, a medium size, it kind of comes in about 300 up to 350 mil, I would say off the top of my head, is probably closer to 150, even up to 170 if it's a latte. Now, the issue I find with some of my clients is that their coffee is quite a strong habit, and over time it tends to move on from a small up to a medium, and I'm definitely guilty of that. And often the mixes of milks that we're using at cafes are not the ones we will buy at home. So if you have a regular skim milk, it's got minimal fat, it's got between 12, 14 grams of naturally occurring sugars in the form of lactose. Now, when you go to the coffee shop and you have soy or oat, often they're using a sweetened variety because it tastes better. And that's why coffee from the cafe is often tasting so good. So you can really translate a simple coffee, which might have previously been just 100 calories or less, up to closer to 200 calories and a lot more sugar than we're realizing. So I think just be mindful of them increasing over time, that some of those more specialty milks, whether it's oat or whether it's almond, macadamia, whatever your preference is, they often are sweetened in the cafe and that may play into it. And it's like anything, the more we have, the more we want. So if you start with a small, all of a sudden it's a medium, and then you're having two of those a day and you're having literally an extra meal worth of coffees a day, and in your mind it doesn't count. So we do have to count milk-based coffee. For small coffees in my clients, I always say it's equivalent to a slice of bread. So if you're a small human like I am, you don't get to have a coffee plus two slices of toast plus two eggs. That's a 500 calorie meal. It's too big. So for a lot of small women who enjoy a milk coffee, it's just having that with a slice of toast and some protein, and that's more than adequate as a breakfast. A coffee with milk is a snack. And if you are someone who's having what we would call free varieties, which might be a piccolo, which comes in at sort of 40 calories, or even a long black with a dash of milk, just watch how often you're having them, because a dash of milk can very quickly become a lot larger portion. And then in terms of caffeine, a shot of barista type coffee is coming in at 100 milligrams of caffeine per day. And it's recommended we have less than 400 milligrams in total. So if you're having a large double shot twice a day, you're easily getting 400 milligrams of coffee. And that's not taking into account any cups of tea you might have, or even green tea, dark chocolate. So it also comes down to checking your overall caffeine. And I can't tell you how many clients I've seen who have trouble getting to sleep, even though they're tired. And when you have a closer look at their caffeine intake, it can be up around 600-800 milligrams per day if they're coffee and tea drinkers.
Absolutely. And even some of those like sugar-free Red Bulls and energy drinks as well, they pack a punch. And when I used to do the weight loss clinic at the hospital I used to work at, Susie, people would walk in with those enormous icebreaker coffee drinks, which, oh my God, the amount of sugar and fat in them, they're like, I think 400 calorie bombs per bottle or something. But the amount of caffeine in them is enormous as well. Like, I think there's 2-3 coffees in one of those large bottles. And then they're saying, I don't eat much. I don't know why I can't lose weight, because they're just drinking their calories. So don't forget about things like iced coffees. I mean, if you were traditionally to buy something like an iced coffee from a coffee shop, you've got the milk, you've got the sugar, you've got the ice cream, you've got the cream. So I'm a fan of iced lattes in summer, Susie, where it's just ice, a shot of coffee and some milk. But again, I agree with you on the non-dairy based milks. There's a big trend towards them, particularly almond milk. A lot of people purely use almond milk for the sake that it's low calories. And yeah, some of the brands in the supermarket can be as low as 40 calories for a cup of unsweetened almond milk, which is great if you're trying to, you know, put yourself in a calorie deficit and watch those calories. But at the coffee shops, generally the almond milk is, you know, heavier calories than the actual skim milk. So I turn a lot of clients away from like a large, say for example, large almond milk flat white down to a medium skinny flat white, because the skim milk actually has less calories than the almond milk, which so many people don't seem to understand, because they do use that sweetened almond milk in the barista brand to make it nice and frothy and that sort of thing as well. So just be super wary of that if you are someone choosing a plant-based milk. I tend to get my coffees on soy milk. I don't do well with too much milk, Susie, and I just like the nuttiness of the soy and of course the protein in there as well, because I use that as a snack choice. A medium-sized soy coffee actually keeps me quite full. So I think that that's a really good option, is either a skim milk or a soy-based milk is probably my two preferences in terms of coffees. And then make sure as well, again, a lot of our listeners are female-based. A lot of younger females have low iron levels. Keep your tea and coffee away from your meals, because it can interfere with iron absorption in your meals. The tannins in tea and coffee, even if it's decaf, can actually interfere with some of the nutrient absorptions in your meal. So I'm a big fan of using tea and coffees as sort of like mini meals, like morning teas and afternoon teas with my clients, rather than with meals, because again, it just helps with absorption of some of those nutrients.
I was going to say a milk coffee is a snack. It's not just an extra, it is a snack. But you had a good case study of a client who didn't think they were having a lot of caffeine. And yet when you had a look in the day, they were having, because we forget tea does contain caffeine.
Yes.
It's about 40 milligrams if you leave the bag in a fairly long time. So what was that client example you told me?
Absolutely. So her goals were A, around fat loss, and B, around just fatigue. She just felt like she'd been hit by a bus every day. She's like, I get 8 hours of sleep, you know, sometimes only six, some days eight, but I still wake up just exhausted. And the fact that she was getting enough sleep on paper, the quality of the sleep wasn't there, because she was constantly waking up during the night. She was having anywhere from 8 to 12 teas a day. So she would drink tea. This is before she met me. She was having super low calorie meals and the tea would fill her up. So she'd have a cup of tea on waking, another two with breakfast, another two between morning tea and lunch, another two with lunch, two with afternoon tea. A, she had super low iron levels, that all that tea was just blocking and inhibiting the absorption of iron. B, her calories were far too low, so no wonder she was starving. And 8 to 12 cups of tea a day is well over the recommended intake of 400 milligrams. So no wonder she's having trouble sleeping and not getting that deep quality sleep, because the caffeine and then all the teas are affecting that absorption. So you absolutely can get decaf tea, which I think is wonderful, but decaf tea still has the tannins in there. So still, I recommend keeping that away from your meals to help with that iron absorption as well. So some simple things people at home can think about, but for most people, about 2 standard coffees a day, I think, would be the absolute maximum. If you drink coffee, you know, long black, shot of espresso, absolutely fine. There's no calories in there. So from a fat loss perspective, that's fine. But just again, be wary of your caffeine intake, because it does. Like, a small amount of caffeine has been shown to be really positive in the research, Susie, from a health perspective. I think there's some benefits from a cardiovascular perspective as well, but too much of anything is not good. So I would say limit your probably teas to 4 maximum a day, and limit your cups of coffee to 2 maximum per day. Particularly if you're someone that is super sensitive to caffeine, I would say, you know, stop having all caffeine by probably about 2 p.m. in the afternoon if you find that you're someone that it affects the quality of their sleep.
And of course, green tea does contain caffeine, because we think of it as a herbal, but there is a good caffeine load in that. So you can get decaf varieties of black tea and green tea. And if you are quite sensitive, that's the way, because really it's only pure herbals that don't have the caffeine load. So enjoy your coffee at the right times, and small where possible. That's the takeaway.
And it's a snack. It's a snack, guys. It's not a free food, particularly if it's got milk in it.
100%. All right. So our product discussion this week is a product I think will resonate with a lot of our listeners, because there's been an increased range in low-carb pastas out there. And specifically today, we wanted to talk about the Slendia range of, we've chosen the soybean or edamame bean pasta varieties. Now, you may have seen these in the health food aisle for some time. The original range of Slendia was based on a konjac noodle, and that's the sort of wetter, I don't want to say slimy because it's not an overly attractive word, but it's a wetter noodle variety that's very, very low in carbohydrate, very high in fiber, and was sort of one of the first players in this lower carb market. And we should say that there are reduced carbohydrate pastas available that are legume-based in the main section of the supermarket. That's not what we're talking about today. We are talking about true low-carb pasta. So the original was the konjac noodle, but I'm a big fan more recently of what we call the bean pastas from Slendea. And the reason I like them is that for my clients who love to have a spaghetti bolognese each week and they don't want to have it with zucchini noodles, they really enjoy feeling like they're having a hearty bowl of pasta. As a product, these edamame bean, soybean pastas come up pretty well and they cook pretty well. They've got reasonably good consistency and texture. It doesn't have that wet, kind of more soggy base of the pure konjac noodle. And nutritionally, they've just, I'll read you the nutritionals. This is per 50 gram serve. They sell in a box of about four serves. They come between $4 and $6. If you buy them online, they're a lot cheaper. The only ingredient in this specific SKU I've chosen, which is organic soybean flour and water, comes in at 60 calories per serve, 7.5 grams of protein, 1.7 grams of carbohydrate, 4 grams of dietary fiber. Now, if we compared that to a pasta serve, you'd be getting sort of 30 to 40 grams of carbohydrate, not dissimilar protein. The fiber in a white pasta would be a lot lower. But if you're someone who loves nothing more than having pasta and including it in your weekly meal plan, I'm a big fan of these products and my clients like them. They're palatable. They don't have an unusual fragrance around which some of the konjac products can have. They taste lighter, of course, than true pasta. But definitely if you like to include that spaghetti bowl in your weekly meal plan or you're cooking that for the kids and you specifically want a low carbohydrate option for yourself, I'm a big fan of these products. And as I said, they're pretty liked by my clients, which are always a good feedback in terms of what's palatable and what's not.
And I liked your lovely comment around they don't have a particular fragrance because let's be honest and let's be real, the konjac noodles to me, they stink. I can't use them. I can't even open the packet because they stink, Susie. So I don't use them for my clients at all. And as you mentioned, I'm a big fan of the pulse-based pastas, but here we're specifically talking about lower carbohydrate pasta bases. So this is very different to what we would see in a chickpea pasta or a bean-based pasta, which is still an awesome option, super high in protein, super high in fiber, but considerably higher in carbohydrates. But I find it interesting when you're reading out the per serve, because if you are somebody that loves pasta, and if we compare that to, you know, a serving of normal pasta, most people are probably having 2, 3, 4 times the amount of pasta that they probably should be recommended. So if you're someone who likes a big bowl of pasta with your bolognese sauce, then this is probably a really, really good option. So you still feel like you're having the volume of pasta, it's just significantly lower in carbohydrates. But my preference, Susie, is just to eat the real deal and I'll happily sacrifice and have a much smaller amount of pasta so that I can actually have what I would call like real based pasta. I honestly haven't tried this one, so I don't know. I probably should give it a whirl before I make any comments around it. But I do really think it is a great product for particularly diabetics and people who like to eat a larger volume of pasta, because I do think that the carbohydrate content and the calorie content is quite low in this, and the protein's great and so is the fiber. And it is gluten-free as well and it's organic as well. So I think that there's some health benefits there as well.
They got some great discounts on the online store where you can buy in bulk and they're quite a lot cheaper. So they're available in both the health food sections of Woolies and Coles, quite easy to get, but I do recommend going on that website because you can buy them straight to your house and you get a good discount. So it's slendea.com, but we'll put a link in there to our notes and on our Instagram page, the Nutrition Couch Podcast. So keep sending us your messages and your DMs because we're using those to guide a lot of our segments each week. It's really great to hear your feedback. And if you have tried that product and have any tips for using it or like it, let us know because we'd love to see your recipes that you make using them. All right, for our final segment, we've talked about coffee, we've talked about pasta, we've talked about fat loss. Doesn't get more exciting than that, does it, in the world of nutrition? But this was from a listener question about fat, and this resonated with me because when I studied about 25 years ago, it was in the height of the low-fat era. So we were taught to count fat. We were sticking to low-fat amounts. And so this is obviously a listener who's a similar ilk to myself. And she says, I grew up being told that I should stick to 40 grams of fat per day. But I've noticed if I use extra virgin olive oil and have nuts, I already reach this amount. I find fat confusing, particularly when I look at seedy grain breads, which can also seem quite high in fat. In this day and age, how much fat is too much? And I thought, again, this is a great discussion point because I'm a little bit like you, Leanne, in the sense that I will work off percentages of calories that my clients are consuming. And I like between 20 to 30% fat in total. In fat amounts, that translates usually to anywhere between, say, 50 up to about 80 grams of fat, depending on how active my clients are and how tall they are. I do think 40 is a little bit on the low side, or I don't get clients to count fat, but I will count, say, 3 to 4 serves of good fat per day, which would come from a serve of extra virgin olive oil, a handful, say 10, maybe 15 nuts, or maybe some avocado, and of course things like oily fish, we get it as well. So roughly 3 to 4 serves is more than enough for most people. But of course, where most of my clients are getting their fat from is from cheese, chocolate, treats, banana bread, and straight away you're getting 20, 30 grams of fat per serve. So definitely in my experience, my clients are not having too much good fat. They're having too much of the bad fat, and then they're not getting enough of the good ones as part of their overall balance each day.
I think definitely the whole, you know, fat is back in the last couple of years, you know, 5 or so years is definitely, I don't think we have a problem eating enough fat. I think for most of us trying to achieve a calorie deficit, we're eating too much fat. But I would say that if you are someone who's tracking and measuring and that's your jam and that's what you enjoy, make sure at an absolute minimum you are getting in 0.8 grams of fat per kilogram. And I think that, so for example, if you were, 75 kilos, that would be at least 60 grams of fat at an absolute minimum. We need that for some cellular processes, hair, skin, nails, cellular health, all that sort of thing. So it is incredibly important. We can't have an ultra low fat diet. We know that fat is incredibly important, but you're right. When you're looking at calories and trying to control your calorie deficit, fat's one of the easiest things to drop out because it is so energy dense. So gram for gram, fat contains more than double the calories that protein and carbohydrates do. So fat is something that we want to watch, but we really, really want to make sure that our fat is coming from good sources, such as extra virgin olive oil, nuts, seeds, avocados, salmon, grainy breads and that sort of thing. So I think it's better to talk in percentages, like you mentioned, Susie, rather than grams of fat, because everybody is so different. If someone's listening and they're 60 kilos versus someone's listening and they're 160 kilos, the grams of fat each day isn't really going to matter. So the majority of my clients who are actively trying to lose weight or fat loss, I'm sort of around that 20 to 30%, just like you are. And if someone's more at maintenance, I'm probably upwards around sort of that 30, 35% fat in total. And if they're actively trying to gain weight, that's where I'd ramp up fat, you know, 30, 40%, because fat is so energy dense. It's the best nutrient to add more of if you're actively trying to gain weight, particularly if you've got younger kids or, grandparents or that sort of thing who are losing weight unintentionally. Fat is a really simple area. You just drizzle lots of extra virgin olive oil over everything, put nuts, seeds, peanut butter, tasteless oils, that sort of thing into all your recipes. And it's a really, really easy way to get in a lot of calories, particularly for fussy eating kids who might be losing weight, or elderly grandparents who, again, might intentionally be losing weight because they're forgetting to eat, or they're just, you know, their appetite's low and they're at risk of malnutrition. So I think fat's definitely something that if your goal is weight gain, it's a good thing to really focus on, because you can get a lot of bang for your buck, bite for bite, by having higher fat meals. But the right types of fat still matter, I think.
And I think that lends itself to our earlier discussion on reasons people may not be achieving their fat loss goals, is that it's really easy to overdo the good fat. So as a reference, a serve of avocado is a quarter, not a whole one. A serve of extra virgin olive oil is a tablespoon, not a Jamie Oliver pour over everything. You know, it's 10 nuts. It's, you know, a thin sort of couple of teaspoons of peanut butter. Whereas I have clients who are having 2 tablespoons of peanut butter on their crackers, or eating a half an avocado in a sitting, and, you know, you're getting 20, 30 grams of fat in one setting. So do keep an eye on your portion, specifically if your goal is fat loss, because sometimes we can not only be having too many treats, which is bumping up our fat intake, but we're getting too much of the good fat just because our portions are a little bit liberal because we think it's good for us.
Particularly at cafes, you know, the famous avocado on toast. Most restaurants are using 3/4 to an entire avocado on your toast. Then they're drizzling it with extra virgin olive oil. They're sprinkling some feta on top, and then you've got some nuts and seeds on top for crunch. You've got 3, 4, 5 fat serves, and before you know it, you're healthy in quotation marks. Avocado on toast is 600-700 calories versus you would have been much better just probably ordering the serve of pancakes. I mean, not from, you know, a health perspective, but from a calorie load anyway. Just be wary of cafe meals. They add a lot of fat.
That would be 60 grams of fat at least, even closer to 80 in one hit.
In one meal.
Yeah. And those thick slices of toast. Yeah.
Yeah. If you ordered avocado on toast, most people will think, oh, well, I did really well with that. I can have a pastry or a Danish for morning tea because I had such a healthy breakfast. So just be super careful that even good fat contains calories. And for a lot of people, where they're going wrong in their fat loss journey is the calorie load's too high, because even though you're eating quote unquote clean and good sources, even good fat still contains calories.
It does, sadly. Very sadly.
Very sad.
Because avocado's delicious. So that does bring us to the end of the Nutrition Couch for another week. If you have not already, please subscribe to have us delivered to your inbox each Sunday morning. And if you could leave us a review, that really helps us in the chart. So we'd be really grateful. We have our Instagram and Facebook social sites running for any feedback or questions. And we love to hear from you at the Nutrition Couch podcast. And we will see you same time, same place next Sunday. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, guys.